Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So the week started with this statement from Joe Biden on NBC's Meet the Press.
I am Vice President of the United States of America. The president sets the policy. I am absolutely comfortable with the fact that men marrying men, women marrying women, and heterosexual men and women married men are entitled to the same exact rights, all the civil liberties. And quite frankly, I don't see much of a distinction beyond that.
And it continued with Education Secretary Arne Duncan talking to Mark Halperin and others on MSNBC on Monday.
Do you believe that same-sex men and women should be able to get legally married in the United States?
Oh, come on. You're going to start there?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so have you ever said that publicly before?
I don't know if I've ever been asked publicly.
And yesterday, President Obama spoke with ABC's Robin Roberts, and here's about a minute of that interview.
Over the course of several years, as I talk to friends and family and neighbors, when I think about members of my own staff who are incredibly committed monogamous relationships, same-sex relationships, who are raising kids together. When I think about those soldiers or airmen or Marines or sailors who are out there fighting on my behalf and yet feel constrained, even now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is gone, because they're not able to commit themselves in a marriage. At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
So this hour of our program, what does it mean for the president to say that he thinks same-sex couples should be able to get married? And what does it mean on the heels of the vote in North Carolina on Tuesday of this week? And what does it mean for bills that or decisions that may have been made by judges throughout the country that may eventually find their way to the Supreme Court? We have two guests with us this hour to talk about these issues. Amy Davidson is a senior editor at The New Yorker. She had written a piece that was on the days preceding the vote in North Carolina. And then there is an update, of course, to her New Yorker article because of the interview on Wednesday afternoon with Robin Roberts from ABC. Amy, thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Professor Suzanne Goldberg, clinical professor of law and director of the Center for Gender and Sexuality Law at Columbia Law School. And thank you, Professor Goldberg, very much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
We'll be welcoming phone calls this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page, where there will be comments on this issue, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Let me start with you, Professor Goldberg. What does it mean for the president to say that same-sex couples should be able to get married? What's the impact of that statement?
Well, the impact is enormous in the sense that it creates a political shift, a new political day in the country where the highest elected official has stated a clear position in favor of equality in marriage for same-sex couples. Now, will that change the law in any state? Will it change the vote in California? Will it change some of the state and federal court decisions upholding discrimination against gay people in marriage? No. It doesn't have that immediate effect of changing the law. But what it does, I think, is not only shift the conversation in the country, but then specifically in the lawmaking process, in the litigation around marriage rights, it changes the landscape so that those judges and those lawmakers who are wavering now potentially have some more political cover and moral force behind the decision to vote in favor of equality.
Amy Davidson, what does it mean?
I think that's really important, that point about a moment when lawmakers might be wavering. You know, his statement comes, it's not at a neutral time. There's a lot going on at the state level, the referendum in North Carolina, possibly one in Maryland. This is an active point of discussion for so many people in so many states. And the president really got to a point where he had to speak out, both because of what Vice President Biden said, but also because his his own wavering had begun to have real consequences. I think a lot of people in his position thought, well, you know, we'll get there eventually. There's a shift in public opinion on this. Our children will find it very normal. But meanwhile, real people's lives were being affected by the changes in the laws, and there was an absence at the top that I think was really beginning to be felt. And so it was very important that he eventually made clear what he believed.
Professor Goldberg, the New York Times editorial today, while praising him, did say that they had problems with his not taking on support for the federal judge ruling in California that ruled that a ban on same-sex marriage violated the 14th Amendment right to equal protection. Will that eventually reach the Supreme Court, and would people urge the president to make a statement on that, or has he gone as far as he politically can right now?
Yeah, so the question whether the Supreme Court will ultimately decide the issue of marriage rights for gay and lesbian couples in the United States is, you know, one of the big civil rights questions of our day. Many people think it is likely that, the Supreme Court will ultimately take one of these cases. I think that is probably going to happen. You know, there are many questions about which case and exactly when that will happen. But to your question specifically, you know, what will the president do if and when the case gets to the Supreme Court? Will he make his views clear? I think we can expect that for this reason. As you know, Attorney General Holder issued a letter in February, this past February, saying that the Obama administration would no longer defend the Defense of Marriage Act. And in fact, the legal defense has been taken up by a small committee of self-appointed representatives from Congress to step in and try to offer some defense of the Defense of Marriage Act's discriminatory line about who can get married. So I do expect that some voice from the administration will be in front of the Supreme Court saying that the Defense of Marriage Act is wrong and that equality should be the rule for marriage rights for gay people.
Amy, we keep hearing this word evolved and the president's position on this issue having evolved. Can you talk about that specifically? And obviously that is also the case for a good number of American people, because the poll numbers, particularly in the last few years, have gone up rather significantly in favor of same-sex marriage.
Such a quick change in public opinion.
Yes.
A recent poll found that really for the first time there was a narrow majority in the United States that was entirely, as Biden said, comfortable with this and supportive of it. I thought it was really telling that Obama talked also in his interview with ABC about the conversations with his children, and how when he had to sit down with, you know, Sasha and Malia and talk about why their friends' parents might be treated differently than other people, he couldn't find the right words. To be slightly more cynical for a second, a lot of people feel that what's evolved has not been Obama's opinion on this, but his will to express that opinion. And there's some truth in that. When he was running back in 1996, he seemed comfortable with the position he's now openly expressed. But I think that it's just there's been an evolution across the board. You know, and I think that that's fair. I think that we can change our positions. We can learn from each other. We can learn from our children. And that was a big message of what he had to say. And I think that when people listen to that and listen to their own children, we're going to have a really interesting and important conversation about this.
Why is it so different with our children?
You know, I don't know, but I think that you think a lot about how much discrimination has to be learned and how artificial it ultimately is. There's been a lot, Vice President Biden even mentioned characters on television, but I think that in the absence of instruction, it appears to be quite natural for younger people to not hate, which is wonderful. I think it's also striking to look at the experience in the military. There was a lot of controversy, obviously, about don't ask, don't tell, and a lot of buildup. But since it's been repealed, we haven't really heard anything from there. That seems to have gone fine. And it's very much the case, I think, that younger soldiers also have different experiences than the older generals and haven't been, it's not a big deal for younger people.
Professor Goldberg, I was listening to Mayor Cory Booker last night, who was on television talking about this. He kept using the phrase single-class citizenship. Can you expand on that? What did he mean by that?
So I think what he probably meant is that, you know, we as a society and as a nation are committed, at least in theory, to having one class of citizens, right? We are, through our Constitution, which guarantees all people equal protection of the law, we aren't supposed to draw lines. Our government is not supposed to say, these rules apply to Group A, and these other rules, these worse rules, apply to Group B. And in effect, that is what the state of marriage law has been, so that if you fell into Group A, right, if you were in a male-female, a heterosexual relationship, you got marriage. And as is still the case today for many same-sex couples, you're in Group B, right? So that you don't get marriage, you maybe get civil unions, or you maybe get nothing. In fact, you may get a state where the state constitution, as we just had happen in North Carolina, is absolutely committed to enshrining your second-class citizenship. And I want to go back and agree with something that Amy just said and that you were talking about, because the lesson that kids learn at school, hopefully, is about this kind of history, that we haven't always had equality in this country. Obviously, there's been slavery. There has been, we've lived in a, you know, for much of the nation's history in a world where women were treated as a separate class from men by law. But we've moved and we've shifted imperfectly and slowly, but that has been the trend or the arc, as Martin Luther King described it. And so the same is true today, and I think it is quite difficult, actually, for many people who might prefer to just continue on with dual-class citizenship for gay people to sit at the table with their kids or their nieces and nephews or their friends' kids and say, well, you know, why should my, as exactly as Sasha and Malia said, why should my friends' parents who are gay or lesbian be treated any differently from my parents?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk, this has been an amazing week, and I'd like for you, because you were covering this, Amy, to talk about what happened in the matter of a couple days. You had this vote in North Carolina, and then you have the president saying that he believes in same-sex marriage. Take us a couple days or months or whatever before the North Carolina vote. Isn't it striking that we've had these two things happen in 2 days?
But I wonder how accidental that was. And again, you know, it's easy to see, and it's so moving to see just how there is progress on this issue. But there's also pushback.
Mm-hmm.
And things got a lot worse for same-sex couples in North Carolina on Tuesday. People actually lost their health insurance because, you know, Susan said this referendum actually banned civil unions as well as same-sex marriages. So I think that the timing, it's not just that, oh, it is partly that the election is coming up, that the convention is coming up, that people really want these issues on the table, but they are on the table, and they're being fought over, and it was coming to have a cost that Obama hadn't spoken about it. Now, you know, more specifically, Obama acknowledged to ABC that the vice president affected the timing of this by talking about his own comfort with it. And then when it became clear that reporters were going to ask every single cabinet member what his or her position was,
yes,
on it.
Right.
And also when Jay Carney, the press secretary, went out and found that he didn't really have good answers for the press when they were pushing. You know, there was a contradiction in what Obama was saying. And in a way, it's bittersweet that in the days before the vote in North Carolina, the administration wasn't out doing what it could to sort of get that defeated, but in this kind of strange, ambivalent, defensive position. You know, the White House has said that, you know, he always intended before the election to, or at least before the convention, to make this clear. But it is, you know, it's a little, it was a sad day Tuesday as well with, on, for people who care about this issue. So, but once Biden had spoken, once it had sort of been presented so clearly, it was really only a matter of time.
And Professor Goldberg, what about the North Carolina vote? Where does that go legally? If a lot of people lost their health insurance, civil unions no longer allowed, what happens legally with that?
Presumably there will be a legal challenge brought by people who have been, lesbian and gay couples who have been actually harmed by the change to the state's constitution, which has said you no longer have the rights that you once had, and not only that, you are forever unequal to your heterosexually married peers. And then that will proceed through the courts as other lawsuits are currently proceeding through the courts challenging similar legislation in other states. And I just want to point out that we have often historically had this kind of intense juxtaposition of a forward move for gay rights at the same time as a sharp and damaging backlash. We had it in 1992, even when Bill Clinton, the most gay-friendly president to that point, was elected. And I remember his using the word gay in his inaugural address, which was something that had never happened before, including gay people among the list of Americans he mentioned. And at the same time, Colorado's anti-gay amendment passed that took away anti-discrimination protections from gay people. Likewise, when President Obama was elected, Proposition 8 passed in California, taking away marriage rights from gay people. So I sometimes think of the country as in a kind of adolescence where, you know, on the one hand, there's a movement toward maturation, at least in my view, a growing up toward equality and rejecting the sort of diminishment of people who are seen as different. But we're doing it kicking and screaming, and there's a lot of pain and slam doors along the way.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we'll take them momentarily. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Yesterday, the president said, at a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married. And thus, the conversation changes in some ways, don't you think? Because that is the first time a president has ever said that. What does it mean? We'll take your phone calls in just one moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright will be with us. She has written a very absorbing book, and a book that took 15 years, really, for her to write as she discovered her family history. The name of it is Prague Winter, A Personal Story of Remembrance and War, 1937 to 1948. We have two guests with us this hour, Professor Suzanne Goldberg, Clinical Professor of Law and Director of the Center for Gender and Sexuality Law at Columbia Law School. Amy Davidson is a senior editor at The New Yorker, and she has written a piece recently on the North Carolina Amendment 1 vote, which she has been talking about. We go to your phone calls, starting with Steve in Houston, Texas. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, the only thing missing in this conversation is any sense of balance, but I guess that's where public radio has always been. Well, the voters in Wisconsin, I used to live in Wisconsin, by 59%, in California, 52%, in North Carolina, 61%, you know, they said, you know, essentially, you know, it's really a simplistic argument to say this is only about gay rights. It's not. If you look at history, and I study history, you know, a society is only as strong as a family. And we look at the collapse of marriages. Our prisons are full of men that grew up without fathers. You can't mess with the institution of marriage and not have drastic consequences as a society. Look at America. Look at Rome, how Rome collapsed. You know, it's more fundamentally is what do our children learn? Do they learn that, you know, that having a family, having children is important, or that you can marry anybody you want? I mean, our schools are becoming I used to live in Dane County, are indoctrination centers for a homosexual agenda, and a lot of parents are fed up with it. You know, you're not talking about that. You're not talking about the gay clubs that are allowed in Dane County schools, about the homosexual clubs. I mean, I used to work and be active in this issue in Madison. And if people in Madison, if parents knew the kind of crap that's going on in the public schools in the name of gay rights that's being fed to their kids, you know, Heather has two mommies, daddy's roommate is coming down to the grade school level. I mean, it's obscene. It's not about gay rights. It's about our children. It's about what they learn.
If you say it's just about children, say your only priority in this is children, then there's a strong case for same-sex marriage, because there are children whose parents are gay. It's just a reality that there are families with gay parents and children, and those children deserve the protection that marriage gives to a family. Those children deserve insurance. They deserve to know that they have inheritance rights. They deserve to be recognized. They deserve the dignity of marriage. There are so many arguments for gay marriage that if children are the one priority, that's, you know, a strong argument in itself. And that's what the judge in the California case found as well. You know, for example, Social Security, if one parent is lost and, you know, the surviving parent isn't a spouse and that family's income falls down below, that child does not get that same protection of a household that has that backup. I mean, if you want to protect children, marriage does protect children. That's why children in these families deserve it.
I also want to point out something else in addition to agreeing with what Amy just said, which is I get it. I think it's a real fear, right? What is happening to families? I actually think it's a similar fear or similar concerns were articulated when women, sort of anti-discrimination laws passed so that women could enter the workforce, or when laws passed allowing African-American couples to marry after slavery, or when anti-miscegenation laws, that is laws that forbid people of different races from getting married, were struck down. You know, the worry is what happens when what we think of as traditional family changes? And it may or may not be comforting to the caller that the reality, if you look at history over time, history of marriage, marriage hasn't been one thing. Marriage has been constantly, as a matter of law and social practice, in a certain kind of flux. What has stayed the same in this country is that the idea of marriage has been, centrally between two consenting adults. What has shifted is the rights of the couple, where a woman used to have no rights. She was essentially the sort of property governed by her husband. We used to, again, forbid interracial marriage. And marriage, again, is a story of evolution, a slow evolution for sure, but an evolution over time.
Dick in Waukesha is our next caller. Hi, Dick.
Yes, we're hearing a lot about bullying in the country these days. Organizations and programs to protect people from bullying. That's exactly what the laws are doing to gay people, lesbian people, and so on. And yet we have laws that permit that. Another thing, I've had occasion to ask people, what damage is it that gay marriage is doing to marriage? Nobody ever gives me an answer. Lord knows that the heteros are doing enough damage to the marriage. They don't have to worry about the few gay people getting married.
Amy, you want to start?
I think that's true. It's an interesting, there is a strong conservative case for gay marriage. These are couples who want, who believe in marriage, who believe in it very strongly and strongly enough to fight for it.
Professor Goldberg, what happened yesterday on the part of the president was described by Rachel Maddow last night as a historic day for civil rights in this country. Is this indeed a civil rights issue?
Absolutely, it's a civil rights issue. The reason this is a civil rights issue is that marriage, although it is a very important social institution, it's an important religious institution. When we're talking about what Obama said yesterday, he was talking about the law and saying that we cannot, should not in this country have
laws that treat same-sex couples as second class, that there's really no reason for our laws to differentiate and to treat gay couples as sort of lesser than their heterosexual neighbors and friends and coworkers.
Thanks, Dick, for your call. Clyde in Denmark is our next caller. Hello, Clyde.
Good morning. I'm glad the president did come out in favor of gay marriage. I think he's a little late on it, and I really don't like the fact that he's going to leave it up to the states. Here in Wisconsin, the bigots won a few years ago. So my partner and I have 35 years are limited to a domestic partnership here in Wisconsin. Due to that partnership, we have 43 rights. Nationally and statewide, regular heterosexual marriages have about 1,600 rights and responsibilities to their partner and benefits from the government and from insurance companies and all these things. It's very heavy discrimination, but it needs to be a national law. Can't leave it to the states because the states are going to screw up every time.
Professor Goldberg.
Yeah, so we have a complicated relationship with marriage law in this country. Marriage laws traditionally have been left up to the states, but at the same time, we do have the United States Constitution, which demands, requires that states treat their citizens equally. And I want to agree with the caller that it's not just a minor thing that same-sex couples can't get married. There are tremendous horrors as well as sort of emotional and financial that occur because states and the federal government don't recognize same-sex couples' relationships. And just to point out two quickly that are happening daily at the federal level, one in the immigration context for binational couples, right? If you are from the United States, you fall in love with somebody from abroad, you're heterosexual, you can marry that person, bring them here, and live happily ever after, hopefully. But if you're in a same-sex couple relationship, that person is a legal stranger. You can't bring them here. You can't sponsor them for a green card as you'd be able to if you were heterosexually married. Another source of tremendous damage is the federal government's financial discrimination against gay and lesbian committed couples, whether it's by denying Social Security to a widow or a widower, different rules that burden same-sex couples in signing up for Medicare, in filing their taxes, so many areas. And then the state discrimination compounds that. So when people think, oh, this is just a civil rights issue or this is just an issue of dignity, it is fundamentally and importantly an issue of dignity. There are also real emotional, financial, and life costs associated with the kind of discrimination we have in place today.
Well, that's a lot of laws that Clyde mentioned, and I think Barney Frank mentioned there were 1,000 laws. That's a lot of laws, isn't it?
Yeah, no, more than. In fact, the Government Accountability Office did two different studies of what it means, what kind of benefits or obligations heterosexually married couples get in connection with the federal government, and it is over 1,000. And when you add to the state laws, it's really a tremendous amount because we as a society have made a decision to privilege marriages and provide them with support and protection. Now, we can have a separate conversation about whether that is justified, whether people in marriages as opposed to other kinds of committed relationships should have special privileges, but that is the way our society is organized, and what it means is that the same-sex couples in marriages and committed relationships are largely left out.
Mark and Durant. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Interesting discussion. I think it's one of the great ironies today that while heterosexuals are in the process of disregarding the importance of marriage, there's on the other side of that is homosexuals are striving to attain that. I'd like to interject the Christian perspective on this, and when you keep asking why is it this way, the answer to that is that from a Christian perspective, there are things that are symbols, earthly symbols of a heavenly concept, and in the Catholic Church that's known as a sacrament. Marriage rises to that level because it's a symbol of Jesus as the bride and his church, the bridegroom, and that's what marriage, that's the symbol of marriage here on earth. So that's why, unfortunately, you know, and believe me when I say this, I love everybody equally. True Christians do, whether they're gay or straight. But marriage, as a concept, not between a male and female, it's impossible.
Amy, why don't you take on the religious aspect, the church aspect of this?
Well, I mean, obviously, there are church weddings, but there's also marriage as a civil institution. But I think that one thing that binds them both is the idea of dignity and status. You talk about, it's precisely because of the transformative moment that marriage represents that people tend to feel that there will never be sort of a bundle of contracts or, you know, civil union regulations that can really replace marriage. In a way, it's because of how we value marriage that this has been so important to people. You know, Suzanne talked about the more than 1,000 laws, but it's also a placeholder for something that explains who people are with relationship, in relationship to each other. You know, if you picture somebody, you know, running into an emergency room, there's a way you could run in and say, well, I have all these papers signed, I have this, you know, power of attorney. Or you could just run in and say, you know, I'm the wife or I'm the husband. And there's an instant recognition and an instant conference both of rights and legal duties and legal responsibilities, but also of recognizing who you are. And I think that it's that respect for each other and for marriage that makes this such an important issue. And obviously that also makes it such a controversial issue and also for some people a hard issue. But I think it's hard precisely for the reasons that it's important.
And Professor Goldberg, how does the law take into account differing religious viewpoints on this issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's such an important question because, of course, people feel passionately that their religious commitments about marriage should be respected. And the answer is that the law respects those religious commitments, absolutely. The United States will never tell the Catholic Church that it has to go against its tenets and marry same-sex couples. What President Obama was talking about and what same-sex couples are talking about and allies of same-sex couples are talking about and advocating for marriage rights is civil marriage, right? It is what the state gives to couples who come before it and say, we would like to be recognized by you as an adult committed relationship as married. And that's the only thing that we're talking about here. Religions get to keep what they do. That's standard American history. And that's in many ways sort of a foundational premise of this country, that that religions are protected in their domains and that the state at the same time has obligations that religions don't, right? So the state must allow religion to do what it does and various faiths to do what they do, which are quite different, right? So in Catholicism, marriage is a sacrament same-sex couples cannot access. In other religions, Christian and Jewish, and in various subsets of those faiths, same-sex couples can marry. And the state's point is it doesn't get involved. The state, though, must treat people equally. I also want to point out something that just to put this into a bit of a global context. The United States isn't the only country, of course, where this is debated, the question of marriage for same-sex couples is debated and wrestled with. But in fact, right now, a dozen countries allow same-sex couples to marry. And among them are several Catholic countries, predominantly Catholic countries, including Spain and Argentina, Portugal. And so when we look at the world around us, we're not leading this discussion. In fact, the United States has become a bit of a follower.
We take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about the president's comments yesterday. I think same-sex couples should be able to get married. We have two guests with us, Amy Davidson, senior editor at The New Yorker, Professor Suzanne Goldberg, clinical professor of law and director of the Center for Gender and Sexuality Law at Columbia Law School. Mitt Romney also talked about this issue yesterday, and we'll hear what he said and talk a little bit more about the political implications, because after all, we're in an election year. How big is this issue going to be? Does it hurt anybody? Does it help anybody? and we'll take more of your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@wpr.org. You can also post comments on the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To be expected, Mitt Romney was asked about his opinion on same-sex couples being able to get married, and here is what he said yesterday while campaigning in Oklahoma.
I have the same view on marriage that I have when I had when I was governor and that I've expressed many times. I believe marriage is a relationship between a man and a woman. States are able to make decisions with regards to domestic partnership benefits, such as hospital visitation rights, benefits and so forth of various kinds could be determined state by state. But my view is that marriage itself is a relationship between a man and a woman, and that's my own preference. I know other people have differing views. This is a very tender and sensitive topic, as are many social issues. But I have the same view that I've had since running for office.
So, Amy, let's start with you. How much do we hear about these very differing viewpoints the next 6 months?
I think we'll hear a lot about it. Exactly how it'll play out is a real question at this point. The GOP response, including that from Mitt Romney, has been slightly more muted than you might expect, I think, because they're also uncertain about this. They've approached it by talking about, well, Obama's a flip-flopper, he's changed his position, without going yet in an all-out attack, at least on a national level. I think it's going to be very individual, state by state. It's interesting in that clip that you played how uncomfortable Romney seems talking about this. He also, in that same interview, said that although he was supportive of some states giving some hospital visitation benefits, that he was opposed to a civil union that looked too much like marriage, that gave too many rights. He also has been a lot of questions about whether he regards this as a federal issue or a state issue, which he hasn't been very clear about. But I think the GOP is finding its way on this because no one is entirely sure how it's going to play out. One thing Obama finally gets points for is at least having a somewhat clear position, because I think voters do penalize politicians who they think aren't being straight with them and straightforward with them. And Obama at least no longer has to answer questions like that, like, do you really believe what you're saying or do you not believe? But it'll be really interesting to see in the next weeks and months how the politics of this unravel.
Yes, it will. Professor Goldberg, what do you think?
I actually think it is sort of surprising and nervy that Romney is calling Obama a flip-flopper on this issue. I don't know why it is not better publicized, but in 1994, when Romney was running for Senate against Ted Kennedy, he told the leaders of the gay and lesbian Republican group known as the Log Cabin Republicans that he would be better than Senator Kennedy on gay rights. When he was governor of Massachusetts, he was quite gay-friendly. And so I understand that given the limits of running as a Republican candidate, he has to take the position he takes, and I believe that he believes his position. But the step too far for me was sort of using this particular issue to sort of try to belittle Obama as a flip-flopper when that is precisely what Romney has done in his effort to secure the Republican nomination and his aim for the presidency.
Mike in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that President Obama has the wrong timing on this issue. I think he should have waited after he was elected or lost, either one. But politics is about the art of winning, the art of the possible. And I think the president's position on this issue will hurt him in a close election, the upcoming election, among older voters from a strong Judeo-Christian background. They can cite the clarity of Scripture on this issue. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 23. Man shall not sleep with man as he does with woman, for that is an abomination.
All right, let's stick to the politics on this. Do you think it will? Does Mike make a valid point? It will hurt him politically? Professor Goldberg?
You know, I actually...
actually would think that people who feel who are inclined to base their votes on their views about Scripture would be unlikely to vote for him anyway, because his administration has already taken a position, right, took it publicly in February, refusing to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. So it would surprise me if Obama loses a lot of votes. I'm not going to say it won't make a difference at all, and I agree with the caller that, you know, the aim here for Obama is to win the election. But I think he will gain more votes by having articulated a clear position than he will lose by having taken a position supportive of equality.
Would you like to respond? You agree with that. Okay. Let's go to an email from Amber in Thiensville. I'm a supporter of marriage equality. I always think the religious argument is interesting. I am a Unitarian Universalist, and my religion advocates for all consenting adult couples to be allowed to marry. By denying the rights of some people to marry, the government is actually limiting my religious freedom. Professor Goldberg.
So this is the flip side of the conversation that we were talking about, that we were having earlier. You know, government has a complicated dance when it comes to religion, right? So those who believe that, those whose religious faith supports same-sex couples marrying would say, you know, of course the government's position should track my views, right? Should allow my views to take hold, to allow my religious views to be reflected in the law. And I think, again, the point is the law, the state law, the federal law, is not supposed to reflect religious views. There is supposed to be a barrier, a separation, so that people can follow what they follow in faith-based settings. And again, the faith, if there is one, if you could describe it that way, the faith for the government is really the Constitution. And the Constitution, which not only sets up our government and gives us our three branches and all of that, but gives us our guiding principles. And fundamental in those guiding principles, again, is equality. And we have gotten to a point in this country, you know, which has had its evolution on these issues, that there really are no legitimate, non-religious-based justifications for having different marriage rules for same-sex couples and different-sex couples.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Tim and Lady Smith, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think one of the things people don't think this issue through, I am opposed to same-sex marriages. I have nothing against gay people. I have friends that are gay. I don't think people have really thought this through. Once this becomes the law of the land, your guest had said this will not have any implication on religious institutions. That's absolutely false. Of course it'll have an implication on everything, because once the gay marriage issue is treated as equal with heterosexual marriage, this will be forced to be taught in all public schools. Any religious institutions that object to gay marriage will be forced to hire gays. This is just a Pandora's box. One of the issues that gay and lesbians don't really want to deal with, if you're going to legalize gay marriage, then we immediately need to legalize polygamy, because all of these issues then become an open door.
Professor Goldberg.
Yeah, so, again, this is the argument that was made against, you know, in favor of keeping race discrimination in marriage and in favor of keeping sex discrimination in marriage. The argument has always been, you allow this, then you allow polygamy. You allow this, then religious institutions can no longer teach what they would like to teach. So just a couple of quick points. Religious institutions in hiring for sort of faith-based positions have always had and will continue to have freedom to discriminate. That has absolutely nothing to do with same-sex couples marrying. What is taught in public schools, likewise, is not dictated by religious institutions. If parents don't want their kids to be taught alongside other kids in a pluralistic environment, in which schools are teaching sort of consistent with the equality law of the state, parents have the freedom to put their children in religious and faith-based schools. But again, the sort of doomsday, premonitions that are often cited around same-sex couples marrying have a long history. And I guess the other point I would make is that same-sex couples have been marrying in the United States at this point for quite a while.
including in Massachusetts since 2004. So we have nearly a decade of experience. And as a colleague of mine likes to say, the sky really hasn't fallen. And in fact, if you look at the data, Massachusetts has one of the lowest divorce rates, if not the lowest divorce rate, of any state in the country. So the sort of parade of horribles that's often cited around the idea of marriage equality for same-sex couples really is not coming to pass.
Facebook post from Ashley, if hetero couples want to save the sanctity of marriage, shouldn't there be a law prohibiting divorce? But we take advantage of the choice to marry and divorce. Also, in regards to President Obama, I am proud that he has stood up for fair and equal marriage rights for all Americans. Being that he is a child of a biracial family, I'm surprised it took him this long to stand up for equality for all relationships. Amy?
Well, I think it's interesting in a way this goes to the last caller, too. To the extent that talking about gay marriage gets us talking about marriage and about what that means to us, what that means in the context of our own faith. You know, as Suzanne said, you know, a priest or a clergyman would never be forced to perform a marriage. But to the extent that, you know, a young couple might come to a clergyman and say, you know, will you marry us, and that provokes sort of either a yes or a no, but a discussion about what it means in that faith and what it means in that community. I don't think that's bad for any side. Maybe it causes, you know, reexamination or an affirmation of what somebody already believed. But to the extent that we're talking about what it means to be married, to be committed, to be a family, that doesn't seem bad for anyone.
Mm-hmm. And we have talked this whole hour, Professor Goldberg, without mentioning love, which is a big part of this whole discussion, isn't it? People, we hope, get married because they love each other. And what could be wrong with love?
Exactly. I mean, really, when people are thinking of getting married, right, they're typically not thinking about their 1,000 rights under federal law and their hundreds of rights under state law. They're thinking about love and a commitment. For many, quite a scary commitment, but a commitment that they want to make. The reality, though, when people take that commitment and that love and go to the state for sanction in the form of a marriage, is that nothing in the law talks about love. It's sort of, you know, the painful separation between law and life. But the law is not about love. The law is about the rights and obligations that married couples have to each other and that the state has to those couples.
Mm-hmm. Amy.
Although there's more than one kind of love at stake. There's, you know, also the parents who, you know, want to be able to dance at their children's weddings. You know, there's love for our neighbors who we want to see protected. There's love for our friends and for our country and for our fellow citizens. And I think all those kinds of love come to play in the issue of gay marriage.
We go to Helena in Green Bay. Hi, Helena.
Hello.
Hi.
So my question is, what is the legal difference between a civil union and marriage?
Professor Goldberg.
The short answer is it depends. But in most states that have civil unions, there is no difference in rights and responsibilities vis-a-vis the state, which is why some would say, why have civil unions when they are just reproducing the same bureaucracy that already exists for marriage? The significant difference, again, is that even if a state treats a civil union the same as a marriage for purposes of legal rights and obligations, the federal government refuses to recognize and honor civil unions as it does heterosexual marriages.
And let's go to Alan. It'll be our last call. We're running short on time from Evansville. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I'm honored to be your last call. Real briefly, I'm a Christian, and I get kind of angry when I hear all these people trying to speak for me. First off, I don't hear any of them giving up bacon, despite the Leviticus' obligations on that. But I would really like to see all marriages not be legally recognized. I would like to see them all be civil unions, because a marriage, I don't agree there is such a thing as a civil marriage. It's a civil union or it's a religious marriage. I'd like to see them completely divorced from each other so we can get out of this silly debate as to what my religion allows or your religion allows or not, and keep that within the walls of your synagogue or church or temple, and keep the other discussion as to what our legal obligations are to each other in those separate areas.
Professor Goldberg.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a strong logical argument because it is true that what a marriage is through the lens of law is a civil union. But I think the reality in our society today is that people are very, very attached to marriage, and not just as a religious institution, but as something that the state also should honor and respect. And so I think it's one of those situations where the logical argument, you know, falls in the face of the long tradition and social strength that marriage as an institution has.
Well, thank you both so much. It was a very interesting conversation, and it is fascinating to see this issue evolve, if I may use that word. Thank you both so much for your time.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much.
Our thanks to Professor Suzanne Goldberg, Clinical Professor of Law, Director of the Center for Gender and Sexuality Law at Columbia Law School. Amy Davidson is Senior Editor at The New Yorker. If you go online, you can see her article, which has been updated because she covered the election in North Carolina. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up, and we'll continue with our Thursday conversation, so stay with us. Madeleine Albright coming up.